This episode of Geek's Guide to the Galaxy is made possible thanks to support from listeners like you. So if you enjoy the show and want it to continue, please support us on Patreon over at patreon.com/geeks or via PayPal over at geeksguideshow.com/crowdfunding. And I want to give a special thank you to LC, who just signed up this week to support us on Patreon. So big thanks again to everyone who's contributed. We really appreciate it. All right, so now let's get to our show. Hello, and welcome to episode 570 of Geek's Guide to the Galaxy. Today on the show, we'll be discussing the animated series Invincible, based on the superhero comic by Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead. And this will involve spoilers for everything in seasons 1 and 2, so just be aware of that. And I'm joined by three guests. So first up, we've got Andrea Kale, making her 37th appearance on the show. She's a graduate of the Odyssey Writers Workshop, and her short fiction appears in the Writers of the Future anthology, Fantasy Magazine, and Lightspeed. She's been a television writer, producer, and script supervisor for shows such as Late Night with Conan O'Brien, The Chew, and WWE's Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown, and she's currently a writer for Pixelberry Studios. So, Andrea, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be back.
The next up, we've got Tom Gerenzer, making his 29th appearance on the show. His short fiction appears in magazines such as Galaxy's Edge and in books such as New Voices in Science Fiction. He's the author of the business book Think Like Google and the short story collection Intergalactic Refrigerator Repairmen Seldom Carry Cash. And his popular science book How It's Made, written for the Discovery Channel, is out now. So Tom, welcome to the show.
It's great to be back, Dave. Thank you.
And also joining us today is Zach Chapman, making his 16th appearance on the show. His short fiction appears in Nature, Tales to Terrify, and Writers of the Future, and he's also the creator of the comic book series House of Blood and The Spellslinger, and co-creator of the comic book series A Haunting on Mars. His latest comic book series, Kaiju Blues, is currently in pre-launch on Kickstarter. So, Zach, welcome to the show.
Glad to be back.
Okay, so let's start off with Andrea.
Yes.
And have you tell us about your expectations going into Invincible.
No real expectations. It definitely wasn't something that was on my radar at all. And it wouldn't have been even if I'd known about it because I was never really into comic books. And not all that much interest in superheroes. So when you suggested, I was like, not really my thing. And then I was, you know, down for something to watch and I was like, all right, I'll just check it out and was immediately hooked. To my great surprise.
Did you have any opinions about Robert Kirkman or The Walking Dead?
No, I didn't even know the name of the person who created The Walking Dead. Sorry. I'm not much of a zombie person either.
So did you never watch The Walking Dead?
I have never watched The Walking Dead. Possibly the only person in America who's never seen The Walking Dead.
I mean, would you say, because a lot of people have talked recently about superhero fatigue that, you know, with all the MCU movies and everything, things kind of
peaked. And I agree with that.
Peaked with Endgame, and then it's kind of been a little less exciting since then.
Yes, 100%. I agree with that. But this was more than that. This kind of hit a sweet spot for me in that it's family and relationship angst plus superheroes, which is, you know, like, other shows that I like are like House of Ninjas, which is family and relationship angst plus ninjas, and Originals, which is family and relationship angst plus vampires. So like this kind of hit that sweet spot for me. And I wasn't expecting it.
Hmm. How about Tom? What were your expectations going into this show?
My expectations were rock bottom. I was like, you know, I love being on Geek's Guide to the Galaxy, so I'll go on, but I've never heard of Invincible. And I looked at it and I was like, I'm 55 years old. I was kind of thinking I'm going to be like the old guy on the show who's like, I don't really know what this is all about, but, and everybody's going to be like, yeah, he doesn't have anything interesting to say. And then I was kind of, you know, bummed about, I wasn't really psyched to watch it. And then I started watching it and I was like, okay, it's like a superhero thing. And then it instantly turned into like, oh, it's cool. It's like a parody of superhero stuff. And I was like on board a little bit. I was like, oh, this is interesting. They're doing something different. And I definitely had suffered superhero fatigue. I loved all the Marvel movies. But then, yeah, as soon as Endgame hit, I mean, I watched a couple of others and I was like, nah, I think I'm out. And then after the initial, I was like, well, where do they go from here? Like now they're showing you like, here's what would really happen if you had superpowers. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. But then I was like, yeah, I still don't know where it's going to go now. And I was kind of like checking out of it when it got to the, you know, the fish wedding and all that stuff. I was kind of like, I don't know what's going on here. And then it got like,
okay, well, let's hold off there.
Yeah.
So low expectations.
I will just tell you what my expectations changed to. It hooked me in a big way, not right away like with Andrea, but it ended up hooking me. And it took a while. Like it was definitely an acquired taste. But as it got, the more it got going, the more I was like, this is really something. This is really amazing. And later we can talk about, I read an article about how it was developed and, you know, where it came from. And I was like, I understand now why I went through that arc of, I think it's kind of interesting. And then I don't. And then it builds and builds. My interest built and built and built. We can talk about that later. But yeah, started out super low expectations, almost afraid to watch it. And then grew to like, I really like this thing. So.
Yeah. So I also had never really heard of this show. I watched the trailer and I wasn't that interested in it. You know, sort of like Andrea, only kind of medium interest in superhero stuff and definitely suffering some superhero fatigue. But so the reason I watched this show is because Zach gave it a strong recommendation and he promised that it turned into like more of a space opera kind of thing as it goes along. So that kind of intrigued me. So I decided I would check it out. And so Zach, why don't you tell us, how did you come to be the person recommending this show to everyone?
I heard everyone's expectations and my expectations were medium because I generally liked The Boys, and The Boys is an adaptation that Seth Rogen's production company did. I generally like that one a lot, but again, it's like more superhero stuff, but I could not make it like past 15 minutes into Preacher, which was the first adaptation that they did. And all of those are comic book adaptations of varying degrees of success. And I get a little bit precious about like the comic books or whatever, video games, whatever, that get adapted into shows. And so I will have like extreme reactions. Maybe like 5 years ago, my buddy Miguel told me about Invincible. And I tried, he gifted me for my birthday the first two volumes. And that's actually kind of important that it's two, that he gifted me two volumes, because the first volume I tried to get through like two or three times and I couldn't do it. I was like, I don't think this is great stuff. I think it's just kind of your normal superhero stuff, which I mean, I'm as fatigued as anyone else and I read a ton of comics and it's like kind of by the numbers. But by the end of the first arc, it ends with the end of the first issue where Omni-Man, like we can spoil this.
Well, let's put out a spoiler warning. So there is a gigantic spoiler in the first episode of this series. So if you have not seen it, I would strongly recommend watching the first episode before continuing to listen to this.
Past the credits, because it's a stinger. So... Yeah. Then it gets like, oh, this is actually like spicy. And you know, he brutally, you know, kills the, basically their guardians of the, you know, universe,
well,
or whatever. They're,
well, yeah,
they're
let's just set that up. So yeah, so we're in it's like our world, except superheroes are real. And so our main character is a high school student named Mark Grayson. And his father is Omni-Man, who's basically like Superman, the most powerful superhero on Earth. And Mark's mother is a human woman from Earth. And so he's grown up with no powers, but with the expectation that, you know, sometime in adolescence, he would start developing superpowers. And so as the story opens, he starts developing his superpowers. And so then So that's sort of the basic setup. And so at first it appears to be a very conventional superhero story. The visual style kind of looks like a Saturday morning cartoon. There's lots of bright colors and a little bit of an anime style designs to the character. So, you know, like your first impression is like, okay, I've seen this a million times before. And then we get to the end of episode one. And so Zach, tell us now about that.
Well, yeah, it's so you realize that Robert Kirkman is, his writing style is to get you familiar with something and then just do like a rug pull. And he constantly does this, like in all of his series. He withholds a lot of like maybe some vital things, like what's the actual genre of the thing that I'm consuming. Like you might not know that for a long time. And he tries to get away with like, oh, well, I'm going to throw like some soap opera elements to keep you interested. And then you get like whopped over the head with like, oh, this is actually like an ultra violent, more space opera, Dragon Ball Z esque epic versus, you know, just your, mid-90s Spider-Man. It's basically like how it starts off. If you withhold all that other, the cool stuff, like the getcha stuff, it's kind of like a mix of like a Dan Jurgens Superman with like the 90s Spider-Man, which is like, I don't think a lot of people are going to be super interested in that element of it, even though that's done very well. Yeah. And I mean, he does that with The Walking Dead too. It's like, it's shock after shock, but held together with these like kind of long sprawling soap opera-y like narratives.
Yeah.
Where you like really get invested in the characters and then wham, there's like maybe a speculative element change or like and I don't know, did in the video that you sent, did he go over like that Mark Silvestri, when he was pitching this, he was like, on issue 25, then Omni-Man is going to kill the Guardians. Did they say that in that? Because that would have been a disaster. Like stretching that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just back up a little bit for listeners. So I sent everybody this video that's on YouTube, which I strongly recommend to everyone listening watch because it's fascinating. It's called "How Did a Broke Comic Shop Clerk Build a $1 Billion Empire?" by this guy, Matt. So it's like Matt with four T's. And so it goes through Robert Kirkman's pretty amazing origin story. I guess, Andrea, you said you watched this video too, right?
Yes, I did. He's my, for me, the patron saint of don't give up.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway. Don't give up. Don't take no for an answer. Stick to your creative vision. It's very inspirational.
Yes. Yeah, so basically Robert Kirkman has just wanted to be in the comic book industry his entire life and was not dissuaded by the fact that he couldn't draw and was not dissuaded by the fact that he went $40,000 into debt on 17 different credit cards trying to launch his first comic book operation. So yeah, definitely hardcore determination.
And will lie to whoever is in charge about what his series is about. It's like, I'm not sure if they went into detail on that video, but like, it's kind of famous. He's kind of famous for having told multiple people at Image because they didn't want to run his book. They were like, we can't do a straight zombie book. And he's like, oh no, there's like aliens and like, there's all kinds of crazy speculative elements. It's just, that's in the next arc. I'm just getting there. And then they like quickly realized like he was just leading them on.
Yeah. So he actually told them, yeah, that the zombie thing, that's just, it's been caused by aliens to soften Earth up for a alien invasion. And they're like, oh, that's a cool idea. But then he just wanted to do a zombie story. So there were never any aliens in the story. But that's a pretty cool idea. I guess I should say too that I did read the Walking Dead comic, and I interviewed Robert Kirkman, who everyone should listen to that interview. He's absolutely hilarious. It's one of the early episodes of Geek's Guide to the Galaxy. So I think that was the other, you know, if it was not both that Robert Kirkman's name was on it and that Zach recommended it, I never would have watched this show. It was sort of those two factors together that got me to sit down and watch it. But I want to get Tom back in here too. So Tom, tell us about your experience watching the first episode, kind of. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I love parody, and I love when somebody's like, no, it wouldn't happen that way. Let me show you how it really happened. And so I loved, like, I really appreciated what was happening because, like you said, I'm sitting there watching kind of like a Saturday morning cartoon. I'm like, this just feels like I'm watching the Super Friends. Like, I'm, you know, when I was a kid, there's like, you know, kind of a fake Wonder Woman, and there's like a fake Flash, and there's like all these characters. There's like a Superman guy. I'm like, I don't really understand what's going on here. There's a Wolverine. Yeah, he's even got the blue and yellow, right? But he doesn't have claws. Yeah, but he has the same facial hair and everything. Yep. And you're like, what? This is just like ripping off all these superheroes. But I was kind of in the back of my mind thinking, there's some reason that they're doing this, they're completely ripping all these characters off. And so I'm sitting there through it, I'm watching it, and I'm kind of getting a little interested in Mark's story as like the son of Superman. I'm like, okay, that's a little different. Maybe they're going to like show you like what it would be like to be Superman's son. So they had to have all these other characters so they could make you understand, like, this is where you are. I'm like, okay. And then all of a sudden, like, they're all together at, like, you know, the Halls of Justice or whatever it is. And Superman's just like, all right, I'm just going to kill everybody. And he just like proceeds to take Batman by the feet and like swing him in a big arc and just smash him on the ground like a hammer. And he just turns to like blood. And then he like grabs like Wonder Woman, like just punches her in the head a couple times, and her skull cracks open, her brains come out, and you're like,
no, he snaps her neck.
Oh, pardon me. Yeah, I don't actually remember the details embellishing.
The best part is the Flash's hands.
Yeah. Because it's like, you when you're a kid, you're like, who do you think would win, Superman or the Flash? And it's like, well, Superman's got super strength. It's like, yeah, but Flash got super speed. He can get away from him, get around him. Yeah, but Superman can go super fast too because he flew around the Earth like 10 times. And it's like, I don't know who would really win. So it's like, okay, Superman just grabs him by the head, and the Flash is like punching him like so fast that it's like a million punches a second, and Superman's chest is like turning to blood. And then he just squishes the Flash's head between his hands, and his eyeballs pop out. And you're like, and you're watching all this, and I was like, I really appreciate parody. So I was like, holy shit. I was like, I really am like, number one, repulsed by the absolute like graphic level of the gore. But at the same time, I'm completely drawn to it in terms of like, I love that they're just showing you. No, like if Superman turned on this, why do you even need any of the other super friends? If you've got Superman, you don't need anybody else in the DC universe because he's just like 10 times more powerful than any of them. And if he turned on them, yeah, he could just squish them all in like 5 seconds. And that's what happens. He just like completely kills all of them. And there's no battle. There's no, you know, the big Dark Knight versus Superman thing where Batman like has the mecha suit and like all of that. It's just like, no, he just like squishes everybody. And I know like, you know, there's plenty of comic fans out there right now who are going, the Dark Knight, like his whole thing is he's smart and he would figure it out in advance. And he would have like a Krypton suit and he would do it. I understand. But if nobody had any clue, Superman would just come in and like crush everybody. And that's what happens. And so I loved that. And then we can go later on, ask me how I felt like later when things progressed to like beyond that and it lost me. And then when it progressed even further beyond that and it like pulled me back in a huge way, much bigger than what I thought I liked about the parody, I ended up liking many more things about the series as it got closer and closer to the end of season two.
Yeah. Okay. We'll definitely come back to that. But yeah, I mean, just in that first episode, definitely that last scene won me over. I mean, it was so disgusting that I was a little bit like, I'm not sure I can stand to, like, this is episode one. Like, what's going to happen from here? You know, I'm like, it was so disturbing. I was like, I don't know if I even have the, you know, the constitution to make it through this show. Like, what else is going to happen in this show? But I was definitely, went from being kind of like, oh, I've seen this a million times before to like, okay, what is going to happen now? I guess Tom wasn't quite totally on board at that point, or
I definitely was like, this is awesome. Like, holy crap, that's awesome. But at the same time, just like you, I was like, that's disgusting. I don't know how much more of this I can watch. But I thought I was really applauding the fact that they were like, let's just really examine this. What if, you know, what would this really be like? And I was like, that's cool. But at the same time, the back of my mind, no, I wasn't totally on board because I was thinking, where do you go from here? Like, where do you go? Once you have Superman kill the Super Friends, like, what then happens?
Yeah. So how about Andrea? Were you, how into the show were you after that first episode?
Oh, totally into it. You know, the first thing that hooked me right off the bat was the humor. It was just so funny and so well written. And then you get to that, you know, the big reveal, and it's like, okay, we've gone off the map. Let's do this. I wasn't so much, repulsed by the gore. I feel like you can do that sort of thing in animation because it's a removed from reality. I always remember the example of Kill Bill where, in the restaurant where she just slaughters everyone. I mean, there's blood flying everywhere, but they cut to an animation of it. And it works, you know, if it's real life, if it's real actors, it's too much, but as an animation, I think it works really well. Personally, that's my feeling on gore. And
there actually is a live action version of this that they're trying to get going. I don't see how that's going to work at all. Like just the level of special effects and the level of violence.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
There's a show. It's produced by the same people. And it's on Amazon too. It's called The Boys, and it's actually more bloody than anything that you see in this show. And it deals with superheroes, so it's like there's a very evil, like more evil than Omni-Man, Superman stand-in, and he, you know, just very bloody, like. And it's a comedy, like the whole thing's like a kind of like a very dark comedy. It's also based off of a bloody comic.
Now wait a minute, because when you guys say very bloody, like, yes, Kill Bill is very bloody, but it's just blood, little not always, but for the most part. And this was not that. It was not just like somebody gets their head cut off and gallons of blood gush out. It was like, I am going to show you what happens if somebody with super strength takes both of their hands, puts them on someone's both ears, and then pushes in to like clap their hands together. And I'm going to show you their face break apart and the brains come out and the eyeballs pop out. And like that kind of stuff is a bit more, I understand what you're saying, Andrea, that it's just animation. But when you take Kill Bill and it's like, oh, we're just going to pump out so much blood like a fire hose, that's ridiculous, that you're like laughing at it because you're like, no, that's not what would really happen. But this is different. This is like graphically depicting like, yeah, that pretty much looks like what it would happen if you had to watch somebody's head get crushed, or if you had to watch somebody's arm get snapped off, or you had to watch somebody punch through.
Yeah, there's a lot of, they obviously consulted a lot of anatomical drawings to make this show. Yeah,
Maybe it's just me then. Maybe I'm just like immune to it.
I like it.
Well, yeah. I wanted to ask you too, Zach, what about The Boys? Because I have not seen that. So when you say that it's bloody,
it's goopy. It's really it's grotesque. Like it's pushing, like, and it's trying to do that. It's as goopy and as like brains and bone matter as you can get. Yeah. So and it's live
not
action.
Just like, it's not just like Evil Dead 2. Like there's a lot of gore and a lot of stuff flying around, fluids flying around and stuff. It's like, we're actually going to show you like pretty accurate representation of people getting mayhem.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's absurd. Like it goes into like, it's as absurd as you can go, like with characters shrinking into people and then expanding and getting regular size and blowing them up. But like
are there any space opera elements in The Boys?
No, it's not. Well, I mean, there's like evil corporations, but it's not space opera-y.
I'm not watching it. All right. But getting back to the show that does have some space opera elements. Yeah. So basically the arc of the first season is that, okay, so initially nobody knows that Superman Omni-Man has killed all the people. Like, it's a sort of a mystery to the character. I mean, we know because we saw it happen as the viewer, but it's a mystery to the characters. And so by the end of the first season, Mark has, you know, he learns the horrible truth that his dad is this killer. And so Omni-Man explains that he's from this, you know, this alien planet called Viltrum, which is this sort of fascist expansionist power. And he was sent to Earth to kind of weaken it in preparation for its eventual subjugation by the Viltrum Empire. And so in season one, that whole arc was definitely the thing I was most captivated by. And that scene where, you know, where Mark learns the truth, I just thought was so powerful. So I guess I'm just curious if everybody felt the same way about that. So Andrea, what did you think? Do you agree with me, my take on season one?
Absolutely. It's a great way of building tension where the audience knows who did it. And so then you spend the entire season waiting for the big reveal. So it just builds this tension higher and higher and higher. And then it delivers. You know, you could put yourself in his shoes of what a massive betrayal this is. For him as a superhero, as a kid who does the right thing, and as this is my dad that I've looked up to and I wanted to be my whole life. And it's such a kick in the balls to see him realize that.
And I was noticing on my rewatch that you also, like, if you know where it's going, and I had both times I watched it, like, you do see the struggle in Omni-Man.
Yeah.
Like, Nolan is like, it's clear he's struggling with with being a human or being a Vulturemite, like integrating into human society, or being like, okay, now it's time for me to take over the planet. Then it climaxes and he just runs away. Like, mm-hmm. he freaks out and then just runs away. It's like, it's so, I think it's such a challenge writing wise to have to redeem this character that does these crazy bad things. But it's like, guess what? That's where it's got to go. Like, this is his father. You know, this is the Superman character. Yeah. And now, you know, he's not going away. Like, he's in the series. So, but I think that that's done really well. I mean, it's a challenging thing. Maybe people might think differently, but.
Well, yeah, like, let me just say, the show is great. I mean, season one, I think it's like 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Seems well-deserved to me. I did have, like, I was a little confused on my first watch, and I guess I still am, about why exactly Nolan had spent 20 years mm-hmm. on Earth raising a family and being nice and everything. I mean, we're told that it was, you know, he was sent to weaken, as I said, to weaken Earth in preparation for an eventual invasion, but it doesn't seem like he's really done anything in the 20 years to weaken Earth that we know of. And it doesn't seem like weakening Earth is necessary at all, because it seems like one Vulturemite could conquer Earth by himself. So, like, why did they need to take so long?
He was waiting for waiting for Mark to mature into his powers to see if that's the other side, is that the Viltrumites, they're low, like the number of Viltrumites is super, like, not as many as they say they are. Compared to, like, the rest of the universe, they're really powerful.
A spoiler, Zach?
I think they went over some of this in the second season, that he was waiting for Mark to get his powers to decide what he was going to do. And then now that there's people that they can, like, breed, like, and create more Viltrumites with, then that was another reason why he was waiting. Maybe it's still not great. Maybe that's not, like, a great plot reason, but
okay,
that was the sense that I got.
Okay. Well, how about like Tom? What do you think about did that bother you at all, or not?
I didn't notice it. It bothers me a little now that you mention it, but I didn't notice it. I did really like what you were talking about with the it starts out where it's kind of like the Viltrumites are like from planet Krypton, right? Like that's the way Mark mm-hmm. views them. That his father has always told him the story about how he was sent to Earth, and he has these powers, and it was this beautiful like utopian society. And then when he finds out his father's true colors, he then learns a story about how Viltrum is actually like a bloody fascist world. It does look like it was described, but the people are just absolutely evil and have designs on controlling the whole universe by killing and dominating, and their past is completely bloody, where they killed all the weak people on their planet. They just ripped them in half and karate chopped them in half and punched through their chests and their heads and stuff. And they're just these horrible, horrible people. I really enjoyed that. And I did really enjoy the detective angle. Like there's basically this Hellboy character who who knows that Nolan did it. And it's trying to prove it. He's trying to prove that it happened. And you're watching and being like, well, what's going to happen when Debbie, you know, his Superman's wife finds out, and what's going to happen when Mark, Superman's son, finds out that he's evil and finds out that this has all been a lie. And that was really cool tension for sure.
Well, yeah, the Damian Darkblood, the sort of Hellboy character, was super cool. I did love him. I want to say before we go too far away from the climax of season one, the other thing that kind of bugged me is that when Nolan is trying to persuade Mark to join him in conquering Earth, he basically presents three arguments for why Mark should do this. And one is that, you know, Earth will benefit from Viltrumite technology and medical technology and stuff like that. And two is that Earth needs the protection of Viltrum from all the supervillain monster threats and things that are constantly, threatening it. And then three is like, well, they're super inferior, so who cares what happens to them anyway? Yeah. And he puts most of the weight of his argument on point three, which is by far going to be the least persuasive point to Mark. Especially, so you would think after 20 years on Earth, he would be able to sell this idea to his son better than he does. So it seems like they were just kind of like making a villain turn that wasn't 100% believable to me, because it was so sort of out of character for how he must have known, you know, would be what he must have known would be persuasive to his own son. So Zach, what do you think of that? Did that bother you at all, or is that just my thing?
I guess I give it a pass. Like, you're not wrong, but it wasn't something that bothered me much. In fact, I feel like I'm not even going to be very good on this panel, because I'm like, I don't really have a lot of like criticisms of the show. I really love it. The main criticism that I've seen, because this show is very, very popular in my circles, the criticism for, and it was season one, is Amber. Like, people just didn't really like Amber. And I didn't have a problem with Amber. I think I liked the writing in her character. So that's really it. I'm just going to defend the show no matter what, I guess.
I kind of ever so slightly agree with the Amber stuff, just because, you know, when she gets mad at him and breaks up with
him. Let's just explain for listeners. So Amber is Mark's human girlfriend who doesn't know initially that he's a superhero. But so Andrea, go ahead.
Well, the fact that she gets mad at him that he hasn't told her, and she's like, I figured it out. You didn't trust me. But it's like, it's a secret identity, and he's got to protect her. He's got to protect his family. He can't just trust anyone. So that just seemed like conflict there. Yeah. But that was, I got over it.
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
that was really it.
I definitely like noticed that I was checking my email more during the Amber stuff than everything else. I do think that, you know, just the conflict that she wants her boyfriend to spend more time with her and he can't because he's a superhero saving the world is just not an interesting enough conflict for the amount of time that the show spent on it.
Well, for during the first season, or did you feel that way in the second season?
Well, I'm talking about the first season.
Oh, okay. Because it goes further.
Yes.
Like that, it explores that more in the second season, and I think it's even stronger.
Yeah, 100%.
I like how it explores it, and I like the scene with Amber and Eve, and them like talking about Mark. I get that it's not the most interesting thing because, like, she can't be right. Well, it just feels like, oh, well, like, he's literally saving the world. Like, how can you complain about that?
Yeah. Well,
she's aware of that. Like, yeah. She's, like, realistically, like, yeah, I can't complain about this. And that's why I can't be with him. Like, I don't know. I felt like that was strong. It felt genuine. And then also like the violence of it, like how it escalates in that second season, where she's actually put in danger.
Okay. Before we get to the second season, let's stick with season one for the moment. I'll just mention there was a thing like, cause I looked at some, I didn't realize there was all the like Amber hate. I read up on it a little bit. And so like apparently there's one scene where she says like, he's like, you knew I was a superhero? And she's like, oh, yeah, I figured it out weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the way she's acted over the past couple of weeks, it makes her seem horrible, you know, that she knew he was a superhero this whole time and has been kind of chewing him out over it. But yeah. Robert Kirkman essentially admitted in an interview that they just like, that was just a mistake. You know, they hadn't really thought that through.
But also like she's like a teenage, I don't know, again, I'm like defending the show, but I feel like she's a teenager. She's acting like a teenage girlfriend, you know, spend more time with me. Damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, it feels realistic. Like it's annoying, but it's like, it feels true.
But that also makes her like, you know, self-centered. I get teenagers are self-centered.
But Tom, you were saying that the show started kind of losing you as it went along. So kind of where did it start to lose you?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact moment, but I can tell you what happened and my experience of it was I did really applaud that first episode because I was like, oh, cool. This is something totally new and different. I did like certain things about it. Like he's going to try to say, you know, he's a superhero. He's going to try to save someone. Well, just because you have super strength doesn't mean you can always save everybody. I think there's a scene where Adam Eve is trying to save some people and she grabs onto this person and the building's going to collapse and everything. And there's a kid there and she's trying to save the mom and the kid. And then she's holding the building up or something. And then the building, I can't remember if this is Mark or her.
This is Mark. Yeah.
Mark. And then the building just falls. And then he's like left there holding this woman's arm. And then the kid's obviously been
crushed, like detached, too. Ripped off arm.
Yeah.
Right. The detached, ripped off arm, bleeding, like still bloody arm. And you're like, yeah, just because you have super strength doesn't mean you can just like hold up a building. A building is not like a big, that's always bothered me about superhero stuff is like, it's not a big like monolithic block. It's made out of stuff. And just because you're super strong, you hold it on this one point, the physics of it doesn't make any sense. So I really like that. But the parts that lost me were, it just seemed to be falling into the trap that I saw at the end of episode one, which I was like, okay, that's really cool. He picks Batman up by the feet and just smashes him like a grape. And you're like, yeah, of course. And then I was thinking, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, okay, well, where does it go from here? Because how do you have any conflict now that you have Superman, who's like super strong? I guess his son is going to be like a Luke Skywalker figure to Darth Vader saying like, you know, you're there's good in you. I can feel it. But I was like, apart from that, I don't really see where this is going to go. And I don't see how they're going to keep this interesting. And it started to fall into that trap where it was like, oh, now Mark's going to fight like this guy. And now he's going to fight that guy. And now there's more blood and guts and there's more gore. And I was like, and then, you know, I started thinking, okay, so it's just going to be this superhero thing where people are fighting each other and there's all kinds of guts. And I was like, I just kind of didn't it was losing me there. And that's when I started thinking, here I am, 55-year-old man. I'm going to have to talk on this panel about this thing. Everyone's going to be like cheering about and saying how great it is. And I'm going to be like, I don't know. It was just like they had a one trick pony and they just kept trotting it around in a circle. And I got tired of it. And that's when that was my problem with it for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes, especially the worst one I thought was called This Missive, This Machination. I was really kind of lost on that one. And I thought, if this series just continues this way, it's going to bother me.
Remind me which episode is that?
I don't remember. I just remember looking at the name of it and then watching the episode and being like, this is really going in the pits for me. And
Do you think it was like more like the episodic nature of specifically like the superhero stuff, like the short try-fail cycles of like whatever the superhero of the week thing is?
It's exactly what it was. But I figured out after it started getting really good in the second season, I was like, why did this happen? Why did they make it this way? Because I feel like you would lose a lot of your viewers in the first season. Like, why was there some plan to this? Well, I read this article today or yesterday rather, where this guy was like, basically like, let me lay this out for you. What happened is when Robert Kirkman made the first comic, he was 26 years old and he just basically wanted to sit down and make a comic that was a parody of, look, here's what would really happen in the DC universe. Like, if you really had superpowers, here's what happens. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, he didn't really have a plan. He just was like, I just want to make that comic. But then he wanted to make more comics, make it a series. So he just basically was kind of playing around with it. And that's where you get the, you know, Mark suddenly has to go get married to Aquaman's widow. That's, you know, just like trotting out all these weird plot points where people show up and then they leave again. You know, they leave up, they smoke a couple cigarettes, they're gone. You're like, where'd that person go? I don't know. That was bothering me, but it's because he was groping when he was making it as a 26-year-old kid. And then he made it over a course of decades where he started to mature as a person and as a craftsman, as a writer and not an artist, but he started to mature and he started to figure out, here's what I want to do more. And then the whole thing started to pull together into this cohesive thing. And he just wanted to make, I guess, 12 episodes at first, or 12 issues rather, or 13 issues in the series. And it was kind of like losing steam. And then he was ready to wrap it up. And then when issue 12 came out, and suddenly the readership went through the roof. And he was like, oh, well, I guess I got to make more than issue 13. And then he's like, I'm going to make more issues now. And then he sat down and started getting strategic and thinking, how do I get a real story out of this thing? And then when I read that, I was like, this makes total sense. This is completely explains my experience of really like the ingenuity of the first episode, really started losing me, got interested toward the end of season one, and then it turned into something totally different after that.
Yeah, let me just explain for a listener. So he originally published the first issue in 2003 and published 144 issues, and the last one was in 2018. So yeah, there's a 15-year period of, you know, of growing as a person and as a writer and everything.
Oh, I thought it was more. I thought they said it was like 20 years of working on it. I guess that was just the article I read. The guy was probably wrong, but
yeah, I don't know. Those are the dates that I have in front of me. So I'm going to assume that that's correct.
You know, every time I have ever disagreed with you on anything on this show, I've gone after the show and looked it up and I've been like, I'm an idiot. And I've come to the conclusion I should just never argue with you again because you do a lot of research on this stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think another thing that happened was those first like 12 issues are Corey Walker. And they're fine. Like artistically, they're fine. The levels of blood is minimal. Like when you first see him, Omni-Man kill their Justice League, it's not like how the show depicts it. Then Ryan Ottley comes in, and Ryan Ottley like gets it. Like he gets exactly what Robert Kirkman wants, and the gore that he illustrates is just like the gore in the show. And so the show's like the first part of the show functions so much better than the first part of the comic, because it's like, it gets past the awkward clunkiness of Kirkman learning how to write as he goes, like from being like 26 to a mid 30s person writing. And so it retroactively fixes characters. Like, they don't just become gay halfway through the series. They start off that way, you know, like they don't just, you know, and there's more diversity. It's like it retroactively fixes a lot of the awkward beginnings of the first, you know, 20 issues or so, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much stuff happening in this show. We can't possibly talk about all of it. But the other thing from season one that I really liked that I wanted to mention was the plot about this character. So there's this character, Robot, who you initially think is a robot, but it turns out that he's actually a sort of a person who was born with severe birth defects, who lives in kind of this tank of fluid and controls this robot body by remote control. And then he's in love with another superhero on the team who's called Monster Girl, who's like the Incredible Hulk, except she's been cursed so that every time that she transforms into the monster, she gets a week younger. So she's actually like 24 or something, but she appears to be like 13 or something. And then he makes himself this like human body to transfer his mind into. And there's this, I found really sort of heartbreaking scene where he transfers his mind into the healthy human body, and the sort of supervillains that he has helping him explain, like, you know, you understand your mind's not actually gonna, like, your consciousness isn't gonna transfer. It's basically just gonna make a copy of you, and you're still gonna die. And he's like, yeah, I understand. This is what I want. And so then the two versions of him kind of open their eyes and look at each other, and the healthy human body one says, I wish it could have been you. And I don't know, just that whole thing I just found really like weird and interesting and memorable. So that was another thing.
It reminds me of this story, Think Like a Dinosaur by
James Patrick Kelly.
Yeah. I love that story, yeah.
So how about, I want to get Andrea back in here. So yeah. Andrea, any other, anything else that you really liked about the show or that you want to mention?
We're still just sticking to season one.
How about, let's go to season two.
I loved everything about season two. It just got better. I think it got more, it got deeper. It hit on a lot of really mature themes, like trauma, grief, guilt. You know, Debbie specifically, the mother, really kind of, it was like watching her spin out, is so heartbreaking. And, you know, she says, this one thing where she's talking to the guy after she goes to the group, the support group for widows and superheroes who have been killed. And she's telling him who she is. And turns out Omni-Man, her husband, killed this guy's wife, who is Green Ghost. And she just says, I wish he had died. I wish he had died so I could grieve and move on. And it was like, that was such a knife to the heart, because it's so much worse knowing that he's gone and you were never loved, as opposed to he died, but you were loved for 20 years.
Well, he did love her just in a pet sort of way.
Well, that's well, yeah. that you're, that's like, a very thin line you're drawing.
Yeah.
But let me say, so then one of the early things that happens in season two, or actually I forget how, I think it's fairly early, is that Mark gets summoned to this alien planet called Thraxa, where there's all these kind of like praying mantis type aliens, like blue or purple praying mantis type aliens. And it turns out that Nolan has fathered another child with one of these insect women, who's this like purple baby kind of, and has sort of had a change of heart and says, you know, Mark, you have to help me protect your brother, this new son. And it's like this total like deadbeat dad comes back yeah. into your life yeah. sort of
manipulative thing. It's so gaslighting, manipulative,
horribly manipulative.
It's just, that was painful. That scene, that whole thing was so fucking painful.
It was horribly painful, but it was also, it was a good character take on Omni-Man, because it explained a lot of stuff about season one. Like, it just shows his complete lack of understanding of like what human beings really are. He's like, no, you know, we got to help these people. He's like, Dad, he's like, no, you know what? He's like swearing at him over and over again. He's like, Mark, hey, Mark, no, listen to me though. Listen to me. This is your brother. You know, you can't just like, we got to help him, you know? And he's like, but you said you loved Mom. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, she's like a pet to me. And he's like, and he doesn't understand that that's wrong to say that. He doesn't understand that. He's like confused why his son starts like screaming at him and swearing at him. He's like, will you just calm down? Like, what's your problem? He just doesn't seem to understand. He's completely clueless.
Well, he's a complete narcissist. That's the thing. Like, he's a narcissistic parent. Complete narcissist.
Yeah, everything is like what's important to him, and absolutely nothing is what could possibly be important to his son. He doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I love that, Tom, what you're mentioning, that he always has this like really calm, like father knows best kind of tone to his voice when his actions are so like capricious and you know, and everything. Yeah. But how about Tom? So when exactly did this show really start to grab you again after kind of losing you initially?
So I did like the wrap up of season one, how there was like a big fight between Omni-Man and Mark. They had this giant battle, and it was obvious that Mark could never win. And it was shocking too that Omni-Man, in the process of that fight, kills like, I don't know, it's like 3,000 to 5,000 people. He just slaughters them, like just blows things up and doesn't seem to care at all. And when Mark tells him he should, he's like, no, I like that. Let me just
highlight the scene where Omni-Man is holding Mark stationary as a subway train comes. And they're just like going through car after car, just, you know, liquefying all these humans inside. That was pretty intense.
It's so iconic that in the latest Mortal Kombat, they made Omni-Man a character, and that's his fatality when he kills someone.
Wow. But yeah, I really like appreciated that, but that's not when it really, really grabbed me. When it really started to grab me was when it went from, it's this cool arc of construction where it starts out like, this is a parody, and isn't it fun and ingenious, to, yeah, we're kind of like, just, there's more gore and more gore and more gore and more weird characters and stuff, to okay, there's a cool conflict between the son and the father that winds up in this horrific climax. But then in season two, it gets into, all right, we're really going to explore each and every one of these characters, and we're going to almost use their powers and these big battles they have to be in as, I think hyperbole is the wrong word, because hyperbole has like this negative connotation. I don't mean it that way. As more sort of like an aggrandizement, or let's take the problems that real people, that we as real people face every single day, and let's put them up writ large on this grand stage of superheroes and show like, but not make it allegory, not make it like, you know, we're going to show like how it feels so awful to be like having a relationship breakup, or it feel that it's almost like you're fighting to save the world. Sort, there's an element of that to it, but at the same time, they ground it in, here's what these real characters with these real problems, like Mark is like, how the heck can I stay in college? How can I care about my grades when like, I'm literally like, I've got superpowers, and I'm supposed to use these superpowers to save like millions of lives. And how am I going to sit through a lecture? I have to drop out. I can't. And his mom's like, don't do that to yourself. And she's like, why? What difference does it make? Like, if I have a career or not? And you're like, you really feel it though. You're not just like, oh, I can't identify with him because I've never been in that situation. Because there's enough human going on, and it's not just Mark, it's Adam Eve. Holy cow. Her story arc is so amazing.
Yeah.
Where you're like, actually, Tom, let me jump in there before we move on from Mark and his depression. I just want to highlight, there's this montage. I think it's right at the beginning of season two where they're playing the Radiohead song.
Oh, God. I went back and watched that again. It's just heartbreaking.
What's the name of this? Someone must know the name of the song. It's Karma Police. And he's just like, you know, he's going through the motions of being a superhero, but you can just see on his face that he's depressed and is not deriving any joy from it whatsoever. And it's just, I found that a really spectacular sequence in the show.
Yeah,
when I was rewatching, I fixed on Rexplode's arc.
Yeah.
And I just really, really like that arc. Like, he's just like the biggest piece of shit. And then he goes from like incapable of like having a relationship to like giving relationship advice to Mark, which is just a beautiful arc.
But good advice.
I don't know. Like, it doesn't get better than that for me, where you just go, you just hate this character. Like, you hate him in a good way. Like, he's just so fun to hate. Oh, and we didn't even get into the voice acting. Like,
oh, yeah.
Wow.
God,
the voice acting. It's amazing. But anyways.
Well, actually on that, wait, I had a little list of, like, there's a lot of celebrities.
Oh, huge
celebrities. Insane number of celebrity voices in this.
Yeah.
Wait, where's my...
Did it bother anybody Sandra that Rexplode sounded like Deadpool and was, like, almost like a Deadpool character? Like, that... In a way that, like, not in a way that, like, oh, there's Batman, oh, there's the Flash. It's like, no, this is like Deadpool, and the comedy is like Deadpool, and the voice is like Ryan Reynolds, and that part I wasn't crazy about for most of it, but I agree, I did love the story arc.
Okay, let me just read. So we've got these are just some of the voice actors, and some of these are like minor parts. You know, Clancy Brown, Mark Hamill, Zachary Quinto, J.K. Simmons, Walton Goggins, Ezra Miller, Calista Flockhart. You just like. I think Mark Hamill character is he's like the tailor who makes the superhero costumes.
Tailor.
He's barely in any scenes at all, and they got Mark Hamill. I mean, it's like, it's a pretty impressive roster there.
Yeah, I was blown away by the voice acting in this. And Seth Rogen doing Alan, the alien.
Well, it's his production company that's making it, and he does such a great, like, that was... such perfect casting.
Yeah.
Like, he knew. I feel like he read it and he was like, this is my character. This is who I want to be.
Good for him, because that is, to me, that is one of the most interesting characters in the whole thing. And that's when I started really getting hooked, is when, not at first, when you first meet him, I'm like, well, that's weird. There's another character showing up and leaving again. But later in season two, when he starts to develop more, you're like, oh, it's getting really interesting. And the whole conflict starts to get where you start to wonder, okay, maybe there is a way to beat the Viltrumites that we didn't know about, number one. And number two, when Omni-Man's, when he starts to really struggle and he starts to think, like, what is it about that stupid planet that, like, I've killed, like, you know, millions on hundreds of worlds or thousands of worlds, and it's never bothered me. And what is it about? This is such a cool science fiction trope that I always love, space opera trope that I love, when the alien comes to Earth and is like, what is it about you people? You know, you want to hear that. Like, oh, tell me more about what's interesting about me. But I'm such a sucker for it, though. Like, every time it pops up, I'm like, oh, yeah, show us what's cool about us and what's bad about us, but what's cool about us. And so he starts to, you know, he goes back and he's like, they're like, what is people don't understand? Like, You've been our finest warrior, and then you go to that place for like 5 minutes, you know, 20 years to us, but it's like 5 minutes to him. And you come out and you're totally like ruined. You suddenly have a heart and you care about people, and like, why? And he's like, I don't know. I wish I could get rid of it. And he's all upset. And then he's like, but he does care. And that's when I started being like, okay, this is getting like, I kind of feared that at the beginning, in the very first episode, I was like, oh, it's going to be like Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. But then it starts getting interesting too, because in a similar way to Star Wars, it's like, you're not sure if Mark is going to get pulled down. But the way they do it, the execution on it is so gripping and engaging that that's when it really, the whole thing just started to, everything about season two just sucked me in.
Well, so Tom, so you started saying about Adam Eve, she's like a high school classmate of Mark's, who's also secretly a superhero. She has the power to kind of rearrange objects at the molecular level and kind of just turn anything into anything. But you started saying something about her, like, what did you want to say about her?
Oh, I just think her story arc was fantastic, and you really felt for her.
You're talking about in the special episode, or?
Absolutely. The special episode was, in my view, in my experience, was the most enjoyable of all of it. I really loved that episode. I didn't think I was going to. I was like, oh, I hate origin stories. They're all the same. It's the same exact story, but just with different window dressing. But that one, I just really, it just, was different than any other origin story where I really, really felt for this little lost girl who like didn't understand. And there's this really touching matchup between her and the scientist who, the evil scientist who created her, turns out to be like this, in this cool twist, is this really caring man who like gives up his whole life and becomes homeless so that he can protect her and, you know, from afar. And that, I don't know, the whole story to me was just like, wow, I did not expect that to be so, I didn't expect it to get me in the heart like it as powerfully as it did.
I just want to say that the scene in, it's in Invincible in the second season, where she returns home and she goes, she knocks on the door and goes inside. You know, it's like she's giving up and giving into her father. It was just heartbreaking. That broke my heart.
Yeah. And I love that her father was not the stereotypical, he beats her and he's afraid that she's going to date men. And,
yeah.
And, you know, he's like this narrow mind. He is narrow-minded, but he's narrow-minded in such an original way that he doesn't like destroy her with his fists or with like his, but what he destroys her by telling her she's basically, it doesn't matter.
He's emotionally abusive, mentally and emotionally abusive, which is in some ways worse because it makes you destroy yourself.
From the inside, it like gets inside you and makes you destroy yourself. And he's almost like, he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand that what he's doing is even damaging. He's just like, I'm just trying to help you by telling you, you know, you're strange, you're weird. Like, people aren't going to like you if you remain who you are. Like, that's, yeah.
And then the mom is just not able to defend her or help her in any way, like in any meaningful or impactful way.
It's a classic abusive family situation.
Yeah.
Where he's abusive and then the mother just stands back and does nothing.
Yeah.
Don't get him angry. Just don't get him angry. Just do what you want. Just do what he wants and everything will be fine. Like, that is so awesome. Classic abusive, toxic family relationship.
And so that makes it so much more fun to watch when she starts to break out of that, when she realizes, like, you know, when she's a toddler and she's like talking about like the periodic table with this high school chemistry student and like explaining stuff to him. No, you know, because obviously because the electrons can't meld because so therefore it's, you get liquid and not solid, and mercury's funny, and she's like laughing. And then she starts to use that to be able to do stuff, and you're like cheering her on because she's had this horrible situation. When she starts to get out of that and starts to trust herself and starts to become her own person and be like, no, I'm not gonna listen to that. You're just like, yeah, go. It's so fun to watch.
Which makes when she goes back to her father after she loses confidence in herself, all the more heartbreaking.
Yeah, I guess I'll just say, like, my one real criticism, I guess, of season two, and again, it's pretty minor, but I felt like it got a little frenetic toward the end, that there were a lot of villains to keep track of. I mean, you've got the Lizard League, the Viltrumites, you've got the Sekhwids, you got the guy who opens portals, Angstrom Levy, who opens portals between dimensions. It was a little, I tried to summarize the story to my wife, and it was just like, no, I can't even remember what all the, there was so much going on. So I don't know what anyone else thinks about that, but
devices, like the Lizard League is just a device to kill off a whole bunch of people and create more conflict and more trauma and grief. Cause I don't think it has any material effect other than, you know, in that scene, Kate dies and Ray almost dies and Rex becomes a hero.
So you didn't feel like it was getting a little like overstuffed with characters and plot toward the end?
No, I really have very few, if any, criticisms season two. I was along for the ride.
I feel like it balances all of those things so well. And like I said, even those characters that you feel like they're not super important to the epic saga of this. Like, they're not. Does Rexplosion even have any scenes with Nolan?
I don't think so.
But, like, you know, or Willie, does it make any sense for him? But, like, they're still so well written, and mm-hmm. they have arcs. Like they're real people that go places, and then maybe sometimes they end in grisly death, but like they're super alive. They're not these like cardboard cut out. So it's not just like, oh, I'm just creating these characters to fight in a scene. It never felt like that to me. It
right.
never feels like they're just creating characters for conflict. It's like, no, man, like all of this, all of that crazy stuff with maybe the bad guys for Rexplosion in towards the end of the second
all
season.
Right, sorry, sorry, Zach, point of order. It's Rexplode, not Rexplosion.
Rexplode. Rexplode. So okay. My one criticism, the names, not cool. They're not cool. Like Rexplosion, that's not a cool name.
No, it's Robot. Zach, it's Rexplode.
Rexplode.
Oh, that is
not
cool.
A cool name. Robot, not a cool name.
Yeah.
Like
the robot was silly. He was just being silly because he was 26 when he came up with that. And then later he kind of was like, okay, well, I'm stuck with this.
Yeah. Viltrumites are cool though. Like that.
Yeah.
That he stuck the landing there, like,
but
quickly.
I agree with you, Zach, but I see where you're coming from, Dave, because there was like a lot of like frenetic, like, oh, then there's this and this and this, but this villain and this villain and this villain. But I agree with Zach in that when, you know, the Lizard League, I'm like, when they first showed up, I was like, this is like the absolute dumbest villain. Like, I don't, you can tell they're just there to like be like a foil for the weaker guys to fight. But then no, that scene where Rexplode gets shot in the head and you think he's dead and then he's not, and then he becomes this hero. That scene triggered, you know, Kate dies, and then the Wolverine stand-in, the Immortal, he goes off on this big thing of like, you know, I've seen so many people, so many friends and loved ones have died, and it bothers me, but this one just bothers me so much more, and I don't understand why. And or he does understand why, is because she also was kind of an immortal. Like she and him both had the kind of the same problem, because she duplicate there's another name, or she could duplicate herself, and she could always like somebody, she wasn't super strong, but somebody'd be killing her, but then there's another her who just like split off from that one, like an amoeba dividing, and then like they kill that one, and then she splits off again just as they're killing that one, but then they manage to kill all of her at once. And then he's like, no, like she and I like shared something because we understood each other, because we're both like kind of have the same problems because we're both
immortal.
Well,
and she says, you know, that cumulatively the amount of life she had lived with all her different incarnations was like added up to the same as him.
But I also think the point was that she had died just like the immortal. She had died millions
of
times.
Thank you, Andrea. Yeah. She had died so many times, like he had died so many times and come back, and they shared that, and so that sets him off on this story arc of like, you really feel like he's really going through something, and he's confused and he quits, and the awesome, I don't know, his voice kind of reminded me of Ed Harris, but the awesome, you know, Nick Fury character who's like trying to pull all the strings, but he's really like grasping. I loved his story. I loved his character too. I think he's great. You really feel all this stuff that you shouldn't be able to feel. You feel for all these people's plights that you have no way to identify with that plight. You really don't. That's what I think is so brilliant about this. And it's not, that's where, getting back to your point, Dave, there are a lot of different weird characters introduced, but each one of them sets off this big reveal of like, you get to see inside of one of the characters' minds and hearts and souls and like what's going on. You get to feel it. So I didn't feel cheated by it.
Yeah. Okay. So before we run out of time, I just have a couple of notes I wanted to mention that we haven't gotten to. So one thing is that, you know, the blood and gore is, you know, it actually serves a purpose, you know, it's not just sort of shocking or whatever. It actually serves a purpose that I've never really seen before in a superhero story, because in so many superhero movies, you'll have these two superheroes fighting and they don't seem to be able to do any damage to each other. And so it makes the fight feel kind of pointless and like it's just going to go on forever. And like, why am I even bothering to watch this? But in this one, you know, you can tell when someone's really getting hurt because blood starts flying everywhere. And so I thought that actually worked really well to make to have actual stakes in a superhero fight. And then let's see,
that's a great point.
One criticism. So the Mahler twins are always arguing about who's the clone and who's not the clone, or who's the original and who's the clone. But the machine that they use to clone themselves, like one body's on the left and one body's on the right. And so obviously the person who wakes up on the right knows that they're the clone. So that kind of bugs me. I thought the machine should have operated in such a way that you wouldn't know when you woke up which one you were. So let's see. Oh, and then I also wanted to give Zach a chance to talk about some memes. So this, if you don't know, this show has inspired some popular memes. So Zach, you want to tell us about some of those?
So there's the think, Mark, think. And that's used, that's the end of season one. And it's like Mark's all beat up and like looks like he's dying. And
yeah, I mean, he's beaten into a bloody pulp. Yeah. I mean, he's not just beat up.
He's like, basically he looks like he's dying. And Omni-Man's like pointing to his temples. He's like, think, Mark, think. And that's a meme format, legendary meme format. And then,
but it's funny because, you know, it's like, again, sort of the contrast between the visual contrast. Like I was saying, that Omni-Man has this calm demeanor when his actions are so outrageous. And it's like the same thing where he's giving, it's like this fatherly sort of like, think, Mark, think, you know, when Mark's just like, obviously can't think very well. He's, you know, bloody, he's like this bloody smear on a mountainside.
And then there's a look what they need to, you know, make a fraction of our power.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like pointing at some jets and they're basically, you know, like gods, you know. And that one, I like literally when you sent like, oh, look at this meme that they had created or whatever. And I had just seen it and it was something about like DC rebooting. And it was like, look what they need to make a fraction of our power. And it was, you know, so like there's also a really good, if you like if you like all of the memes, a good group to join on Facebook is Omni Posting, which is just like a shit posting group, but it's all like Invincible memes. And some of them are like deep cuts. But I think that they are good about spoilers for, like, you know, most of the people are not comic people. So it's just, you know, it's just to the show. So you should be good
no,
to join,
like,
that group.
Spoilers is definitely a huge occupational hazard discussing this show, because I got some major spoilers just doing research just today. So definitely be very careful.
I'm not doing any research.
I would highly recommend reading the comic and that will spoil the whole show, it's very good.
I kind of love this show so much that I want to see it in this form. I want
the show
experience.
Is better.
Wow.
It is better. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like it's like the second draft basically.
Yeah. Especially that first season. It's demonstrably like they retroactively fixed parts that were sub, like, just that weren't working all that great, and like they fixed the art, because I'm like the art of the first two books is like not where it gets to once they get a Ryan Ottley, who just does the blood and guts so perfectly, and which is very well represented on the show.
I watched this motion comic thing that covers the first 13 issues, and there's this whole thing about Samson's butler that was just so dumb. I was like, oh man, I'm definitely glad they cut this out.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Zach, since you've read it all, how much does the show veer away from the original, from the comic?
I would say it only veers away in that it will explore more territory. So, like, for example, the Eve origin story, like her dad is like shitty in the comic in the same way, but it's not explored nearly as deeply. Mm-hmm. It's one oversized issue. It's not even in the main series, but like that, her origin story is an issue, and it's just, it can't, compete with a 45-minute long episode that goes like a full deep dive. Right. And the like the Donald character is not nearly as well fleshed out. And so they're able to like, I think it is like a second draft. It's like taking all of the general arcs, especially like I said, in those first like 20 issues and like going deeper into what the characters are. And then again, his best friend in the first like 10 issues is dating, Amber. It's either dating Amber or Eve. I can't remember. It's Amber. And it's just like that just didn't need to happen. Like if he's gay, let's not retroactively make him gay. Let's make him gay from the very beginning, so it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel awkward that way. It feels super organic in the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am very very excited for the next season.
Has a big
knowing
greenlit?
Where things go.
I would think.
I hope so. Because I swear to God, if I don't three, I will do some murder.
I think they greenlit seasons 2 and 3 together, if I'm remembering correctly. Oh,
thank God.
I don't like how long it takes to for the seasons to come out. But at least they gave
because it was like 3 or 4 years or something between season 1 and 2.
2021 and 2023.
Well, maybe if they put a lot of scenes where the characters have hands over their mouths and start shooting from the back of the head.
Yeah, I just want to bring that up because that is one of my favorite jokes in the whole thing is how they go into the expo. They go to Comic-Con and he talks to the writer of Seance Dog and he explains how they cut corners in the animation.
Tom Robbins voicing that character. So that whole scene is a direct adaptation of a one page in the comic that's like pretty a well-known riff that he did, and also just to save time because the amount of work it is to make comics, I make comics and it's extremely time consuming and expensive, they reuse panels. And there's a scene where it's an eight panel page where like they're all the same panels and it's basically a direct recreation of that joke from the comic, and I thought it was done really really well.
I saw
a lot of people online
loud.
Complaining about it. Yeah,
yeah. I'm gonna be one of those people complaining about it because I thought it was like I thought that joke was funny when I saw it in The Simpsons in 1993. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Like they had that exact same joke in The Simpsons. Okay. Well, yeah, they go to the Itchy and Scratchy animation studio and Lisa's like, wow, it must be a lot of work to make all this animation. And the guy's like, yeah, well, to save cut corners, our artists just reuse the same backgrounds over and over again. And as they're having that conversation, the same background is scrolling behind them. So, I mean, I don't know. I felt like that and there's like this Spider-Man joke where he's
the Spider-Man joke is great.
Okay. Well it's too
Fock.
He's like, yeah, I've had a lot of experience with parallel worlds recently or something like that. Like, I don't know. That's because that just undermines the reality. Like, this is a serious enough show that sort of humor just like undermines the reality.
See, I love that kind of humor. I love self-referential stuff. I love that sort of thing. There was also the Batman joke in that same episode.
I was talking to Batman
in the alternate, in our reality. And he's like, that's Batman's a little lazy.
So there's two issues of Spider-Man that have Invincible in them. And then there's an issue of Invincible that has Spider-Man's like webs and stuff. And it is in that arc. So that's all, they just weren't able to get the rights to Spider-Man, but that's actually all true to the comic when he's fighting Engstrom and he's going through dimensions. Like, and because Kirkman was writing Spider-Man at the time, he was able to do that. So I think like that was a really big thing at the time for like superhero comics. And also like there was, you don't see it in the show, but there were a lot of Spawn is in the first couple of issues of Invincible, and so is Savage Dragon, because it's all under Image, and you know, they were like, hey, can you come into my comic? Can I come into your comic? And it was all creator owned, so it was all cool to do, you know.
All right, cool. We should start wrapping this up pretty soon. Does anyone have any other topics that they wanted to get to before?
I just want to bring up the music. You brought up they had Radiohead, but they had like this amazing soundtrack to it that I actually went and looked up because it was just so great. But they have like, you know, like Nick Cave and Danger Mouse. They have Vampire Weekend, Birdie and Rhodes, LPX, like amazing artists. They've got such
Run the Jewels. Whenever the two twins, it's like they have a Run the Jewels theme song that's like, I don't know, I just love it. I think it's so cool. Every time they're on screen, I'm like,
I love them all, our twins. I the music just got me, and they use it perfectly, like you said, like Radiohead, that song was just a knife to the heart. Yeah, just the music is so over the top good.
I think it helped for me. Like, I was like, how are they going to try to like start a redemption for Nolan? Having him, just having him with that music. I can't remember the music,
I went back and looked it up.
It's so good. It's so fitting for him to like be contemplating and just looking at the spiral galaxy, all sad, looking at black holes and stuff, with like sad cloying music. Like, oh man,
that was Nick Cave. So that was the Nick Cave song when he did with Nolan's "What Happens to Nolan" and almost trying to kill himself.
So if you ever have to apologize to someone and they're not accepting your apology, just make sure you play that music. You're like, do you accept my apology now?
It'll work for me.
Tom, anything else? Any other topics you wanted to mention?
No, I would just say if you're curious about watching the show, you know, stick it out through, watch the first episode, you'll enjoy that, and then stick it out through the doldrums or the second act weakness
through
and,
the fish and, wedding. Tom seems like really hated the fish wedding.
I was like, I can't believe I have to watch like 10 more episodes of this show now, and I was frustrated at that point. I was like, what, he's got to marry? I don't want to see this, but it just wasn't interesting at all. But just stick it out through that and you'll get a really good reward, increasing level of reward as you go.
The fish wedding is actually season two.
Is it?
Yep, it's episode, I wrote down all the episodes with the titles. Yeah, it's episode two, and episode three is of second season is this missive, this machination, which you said was you hated.
Those are both season two?
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I guess I didn't like it longer than I thought.
Well, we appreciate you, Tom, for sticking with it.
No, it was worth it. It was very good.
All right, cool. So Tom, is that your final thought or do you have any other final thoughts?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, cool. How about Andrea? Final thoughts?
I loved this. I finished it maybe probably about 4 or 5 hours ago, and it actually left me depressed because I just wanted more. And I've now started to watch it again from the first episode. I really loved it. It's beyond all expectation of liking this. One of my favorite shows I've watched in recently.
Wow!
And I'm so glad you told me to watch it, Dave.
Yeah. Well, really, Zach gets all the credit here.
All right. Well, thank you, Zach.
Yeah. Thank you, Zach.
I'm grateful that you guys liked it, and it's crazy because it's just a superhero comic, and then they did a good adaptation.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I've had a lot of criticism, but I mean, again, like 98%, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. I totally endorse that. It's really, really good. It's really, really well done. Definitely looking forward to season three, especially if they have more space opera elements.
I promise.
All right, cool. So then why don't we wrap things up there? So we've been speaking with Andrea Kail, Tom Gerentzer, and Zach Chapman. So thanks everyone so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And that was our panel. So big thanks again to Andrea Kail, Tom Gerentzer, and Zach Chapman for joining us on the show. Geek's Guide to the Galaxy is made possible thanks to support from listeners like you. So if you enjoy the show and want it to continue, please support us on Patreon over at patreon.com/geeks or via PayPal over at geeksguideshow.com/crowdfunding. All right, so that was our show. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.